The following programming is sponsored by the Museum of Sports. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
For the Eagles, the season begins with a bright horizon that is the heritage of every pro football team. In recent years, the gods have been unkind, but the Eagles enter every new season with hope. Hope for Eagles 70.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your parents to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph to maybe even taking your own kids to their very first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams, and the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel, our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all right here in the South Philly Sports Complex. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so take a look. Museum of Sports show brought to you every week by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me, as he does from his sports cave in Villanova, he is our guide and mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founding vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers and creator of the Museum of Sports, and author of the book Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Philadelphia's greatest showman, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. How are you, Lou?
I'm doing great, Can't wait to get into our little gripe session. You don't gripe, I gripe.
Yes, I listen.
I'm going to give it as much time as we can.
Hey, coming up today, former Philadelphia Eagles linebacker, cancer survivor, and author Kevin Riley is back on the Museum of Sports show to talk Eagles so far. And following him, he's a teacher by day and a memorabilia collector by night, Collector's Sports Daily and Sports Illustrated contributing writer Horacio Ruiz is going to be here. And our King of Sports Collectibles is going to be here with what's hot and what's not and what's affordable in the collectibles market and how you can get a sneak peek at our partners in the Museum of Sports at the Depatche Memorabilia Collection. Nick Depatche Jr. is here. But up first, our man on the street, he's our man about town, our bon vivant, Lou Scheinfeld, ponders whether the expectations of the Eagles and Phillies seasons are unrealistic. And also, Lou's going to tell us what Rob Thompson may have whispered in his ear at the Depatche fundraiser last week about lousy umpiring. Lewis?
Yeah, well, kids that are 16 years old living in Boston have been to 10 championship parades. How many have you been to? How many have I been to? We get around to it once a century. I know I'm exaggerating, but it isn't much more than that, okay? So why are the press, the media, who the ink-stained wretches should know better? Do you know that all four Eagles beat writers picked the Eagles to lose in Brazil?
Yeah.
They won. All four Eagles geniuses, experts, picked the Eagles to win this week. They lost, all four. So whatever they do, you go the other way. Now, it's crazy. It's crazy. With all the frustration we've had here in Philadelphia over the years with the collapse of the Eagles, 10-1 last year, we still talk about the 64 Phillies. The Phillies blew it last year when they could have easily got into or won the World Series. So now I'm at the Depatche fundraising over in Jersey last week for his wonderful museum that he has over there near Turnersville.
Our great partners.
Rob Thompson was there, and what a great guy. I mean, friendly, posed for pictures with everybody. It was a wonderful affair, and the doc raised some good money for his museum. And they passed the microphone around, and I took the microphone. I said, Rob, I don't want to get you in trouble with the league. What do you think of the umpiring this year behind home plate? It's been so far off. I can't wait for the robo, which I hope comes next year. And you know what Rob said?
Like the Hawkeye. Yeah,
he said, I don't feel that way. He said, that's a very hard job. It's very subjective. These guys do the best they can. He says, and you know what the problem is?
Wow.
It's that little box. that little white box that embarrasses them. He says it's not exactly angled correctly. That'll be changed. He said, but it's you got to give these guys a break. He says, get it called one way, we get it called another way. It evens out. He says, I hope they take away that box. I think it's awful. So someone else said to him, manager, what do you think of the Phillies' chances of getting to the World Series this year? And then he said, not only do I think we're going to get there, we're going to win the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
And yeah.
He's not one for overstatement.
No, I was shocked. I mean, yeah. I don't think he drinks, but I don't know what he smokes.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's coming from him. That says something.
I was surprised, but who didn't hold back?
In the Depatche fundraiser, we'll talk a little bit more about that with Nick Jr. A big event out there to raise money for the museum and for the Depatche Museum, which is kind of our sneak peek preview museum. Hey, there was an interesting article, and as you probably have noticed over the last few years, when I'm not rooting for the Eagles, I've been a Vikings fan since I was a kid. It started when I was growing up in Connecticut as a Fran Tarkenton fan, and then Fran was traded from the Giants to the Vikings, and all sorts of, four more Super Bowl appearances, four more Super Bowl losses. But there was a great article in the Times, New York Times today, in The Athletic, interview with Fran Tarkenton. And, he was never sort of a humble guy, and he's only gotten less humble and more crotchety in his old age. And for those of you watching on Facebook Live, I'm rolling an embedded video they have from X or Twitter on there, just some Fran Tarkenton highlights. But he says he invented scrambling, if he didn't invent it, he certainly perfected it. And they're running a highlight now of him scoring a touchdown and throwing the ball into the face of somebody who did a late hit on him out of bounds, and he gets in a fight. I think he was barely 6 feet, 190 pounds, but the guy had balls and probably ran as many yards sideways and backwards as he ran forwards and threw for over his entire career. He's just a guy that kind of created a niche, and of course now every quarterback is has to be mobile, has got to be an athletic runner. And so they, you look at Fran, and he's still living in Buckhead outside of Atlanta, and but he's kind of a cranky old man. He didn't last long on Monday Night Football after he retired, and nobody really wanted him because he just is sort of kind of a mean dude.
But he was the first. I loved him. I loved watching his
games.
I
did too.
He was exciting, and you just said he ran north and south. And east and west, it didn't matter, he just ran, and he scrambled, and he got out of incredible things. He was one of my favorites.
I mean, he sort of created it, and we've had several good Randall Cunningham type quarterbacks, Donovan McNabb, obviously Jalen Hurts, to a certain extent Carson Wentz, though that's a name that shall not be mentioned heretofore.
Don't curse, please.
Yeah, and I told the story before, and in brief, my father went into Manhattan where he worked for many years. He was on the board of a nonprofit. He was going to a fundraiser that he was on the board of, and Fran Tarkenton was going to be there. And of course, I was all excited. I don't remember how old I was. And I gave my dad a football, or he bought a football, and took it in and came back. And of course, I was already asleep that night. Got up early the next morning because he had to take a train to Manhattan. And he said, here's the football. And I said, Dad, what was our idol like? And I'll caution Sam, because I bleeped it the last time I told this story a couple of years ago. So you'll have to, I don't know if you can bleep it now, but he goes, our idol is a boop hole. And I was just like, oh no, really? He said it was all he could do. When he saw me there with the football, he just rolled his eyes and was just kind of like disgust. And he grabbed what the then equivalent of a Sharpie was, and scribbled something that could have been his signature. It could have been his EKG from his physical. I don't know. And of course, when you're a kid of that age, you're resilient. You bounce back. And I'm maybe he's just having a bad day, Dad. I don't know. But I was trying to be optimistic. At any rate,
curmudgeon.
Athletic in the Times. If you have had a morbid curiosity and you're mildly curious about Fran Tarkenton, check it out. It was in today's edition of the New York Times. Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible contribution so you can be part of Philly's Sports Shrine today at the redesigned South Philly Sports Complex. We're going to have some cool swag that's going to be rolling out here in the weeks to come for everybody who donates. And don't forget to buy Lou's book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. A portion of the proceeds goes to the Museum of Sports, and you can get a personally autographed copy. When we return, former Eagles linebacker Kevin Riley talks about the Eagles' prospects when the Museum of Sports show returns here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a couple of minutes.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Parent, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked.
Did you miss a recent Museum of Sports show? No worries. You can see or listen to any of our previous shows on the Museum of Sports website or on our Facebook page. You'll love our lineup of great guests, including Merrill Reese, the Eagles' Vive Sekahema, Bill Berge and Kevin Riley, Flyers broadcasters Jim Jackson and Steve Coates, and the Phillies' always colorful Larry Boa. The Museum of Sports is on the air and Facebook, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860 and Facebook Live.
Good afternoon, everybody. Pat Summerall with Tom Brookshire. The Eagles are in white, and the Cowboys in that blue attire that there has been so much controversy about.
I don't think it makes a bit of difference. I think Ron Jaworski summed it up. He told me he had to have a great game today.
We're back on the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, brought to you every week by the DePachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our guest today has been a longtime friend of the Museum of Sports show, former Eagles linebacker, cancer survivor, and author of the great book, Tackling Life, How Faith, Family, and Fortitude Kept an NFL Linebacker in the Game. He's also been part of the Villanova football play-by-play team and has been host of Behind the Lines with Kevin Riley on RVN television. And he's got podcasts all over the place. A huge welcome back here on the Museum of Sports show to Mr. Kevin Riley. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great. Really great to be back to you guys and back in the saddle, as they say.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's been an interesting couple of weeks in Eagles season. You know, as Lou was lamenting off the top of the show, all the local sages were predicting a loss there in Brazil, and they won against the Packers. And then everybody was predicting a win against the 49ers, and they lost. Not that, you know, our local sages are any barometer of anything. But, I mean, you're a tea leaf reader. I mean, what do you see out of what we've seen in those first 2 weeks?
Well, I'll go back a little bit further than that, say, last season. Yeah. People wonder what happened to that team down the stretch. And if you really diagnosed it properly, and I spent some time watching some film on it, you have a new offensive and a new defensive coordinator. That puts you behind an eight ball to begin with. If you take a look at the nine wins they had at 9-0, they were all, you know, nail biters. I mean, I can remember sitting in here and we just get by again. We just get by again. If you're the offensive coordinator, you say to yourself, they'll shoot me if I try to change anything because we're winning. But now they got nine films on us. They're going to be able to figure out what we can do. And it's, you know, they're going to put up a good defense against us. Yeah. And I think that's exactly what happened. And then one thing led to another and then they stumbled, 1-6 down the stretch. So now they have another offensive coordinator and defensive coordinators, but at least those guys are not first-year guys. So I have a little bit of trust in that. I also believe that coming back from Brazil or wherever they were down there, I think they were a little heady on who they really were. And they really went up against a very good team last week. And that team is going to, when you got Kirk Cousins, who, by the way, has made more money playing quarterback than anybody ever because he gets traded and he signs big contracts. I've got a close relative on the team by the name of Brian O'Neill. He plays right tackle for Minnesota. Yep.
Know the name.
And he'll tell you a lot about Cousins. Smart. Probably not the most athletic guy out there right now, certainly with the run, but he certainly played well against the Eagles. If you let him throw the ball, he's going to beat you. And that's what happened last week. He was stepping up. Main reason for that, we got four defensive linemen that cannot put on the quarterback.
Yeah.
I'm really upset with Carter and Davis not being able to get off blocks. They're pushing guys back, and all the quarterback has to do is step up and hit the wide receiver or down and out who's ever open. So they got some things to clean up if they're going to get back on track. And it's not a great time that they'd be facing New Orleans.
I can't blame Sirianni for making that call. He thought it was the right thing to do at the time. The drop pass. Look, if everything hinged on that, then they didn't play a good game against a team they could have beaten.
I think they got shut out
the week before Atlanta. So these things happen. But what kills me, Kevin, is the media, the fans. They think this is the greatest Super Bowl or bust. Come on, let's win a playoff game. Yep. And we haven't done that lately. So I think they have a good team. I'm not a big Jalen Hurts fan. I'll say candidly, I think he's overrated and overpaid. I never saw a guy have a couple of decent years and go to $50-some million a year. And the money is crazy. I'm not a fan of his. Hopefully the team can build him up offensively, help him out, and the defense comes in and keeps these games close or whatever. But coming off of last year, I worry.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think that they're in that mindset also is here we go again. And, you know, to lose a game that they should have won. And in so many ways, as Doug was just saying, we had that game won several times and we just shot ourselves in the foot. You know, when you're playing, I thought we had the game when they had 40 some seconds to go and they had to go to the length of the field.
Yeah.
Our two playing so far back, and I get it. You don't want to have anybody hit it over your head. But that would take the quarterback a little longer to hold on to the ball till somebody got there was probably the better choice. The other thing is the cornerbacks know that they got to stop them from getting out of bounds. And on every one of the down and out plays, their guys got out of bounds.
They let them go.
So there was some really, you know, I would say fundamental things they let go in that last 2 minutes.
Well, not to put you on the spot, but what's their record going to be at the end of the season? Your best guess?
I'm hoping for 10-7.
Okay, that's me too.
I'm hoping for them. They got a lot to go do. I'm worried about Jalen as you are. I think he peaked 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think he's lost a step, and I think he's lost a little confidence. Right. You know, for a while, Jalen felt that the harder I work, the better I'll get. Not necessarily so if you're wearing your body down.
You grind yourself up. Exactly, yeah. Kevin.
And some punishment last week. He cannot get around the ends like he used to. He's pretty good with running it up the middle. He barreled over a couple people. But he's not going to last 17 games doing that. They've got to get better. And they obviously missed A.B. Brown too.
Now, you know who had an evolution? It may be somewhat similar to Hurts. But he seemed to be productive over a longer period of time was Donovan McNabb. Donovan McNabb was always a very mobile quarterback, had a good arm. And then once I think he tweaked that, whatever it was, his ankle or can't remember what it was on an innocuous play out of bounds. And he became more of a pocket passer and ran only out of necessity. I wonder if that's the sort of tipping point that a Jalen Hurts needs to figure out is if he's not quite as mobile, you need to focus on being a pocket passer first. and then run, as opposed to that sort of, as I said a few years ago, was the most expensive high school offense we had seen in a while.
Well, you know, the other thing you talk about, Jalen, he goes 30 days of practice without throwing an interception. Now, that's bad for our defensive backs if they haven't made an interception, and maybe that's par for the course, okay? Because they don't look like, except I think some of the young guys look pretty good. But if Jalen can do that in practice, that tells me a little bit about when he gets in the game. I think he gets a little bit tight. And I think, you know, when things aren't going well, he panics a little bit. When they're going well,
right,
he looks great. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, really commands the attention of the team.
Kevin, why aren't they using Dallas Goedert more? He is a vital cog in that team and can churn up. Are they keeping him back to block, or Dalen just doesn't see him? What do you think?
Well, I think they back to block. And the other thing is, I thought Jalen was giving up real quick on 1, 2, 3. I don't think he saw the third receiver whole lot. He was ready to run with the ball and got, you know, closed up. So, Lou, to your point, I think he probably was in blocking, but boy, what a waste of a talent to have that guy in blocking.
Right.
Got to spend some time with him down in Miami at a wedding, and really a good dude and really cares about keeping in shape. I was surprised to see him. He wasn't much bigger than me. I expected
this
guy, like, you know, he's listed at like 235 or 240, but it's all on his legs. He doesn't have this great upper body. He kind of looks kind of normal, but a decent guy and a real competitor, and they've got to use him more. And by the way, I think Calcaterra is coming along a little bit.
I agree. I like him, and I think he's another one of those guys that, you know, no one pays much attention to, and there's not a lot of film on him. And I think if they're smart, they'll work him in until he gets, you know, defensive coordinator out of existence, and then you move on to somebody else. They've got a fairly deep bench there, Kev, and anyway, hey, I want to take a little bit of time. You're a Villanova Wildcats are 3-0.
3-0.
And they got Maryland this week. Yeah, this weekend.
That's a big one.
That's a big one. Maryland took us 70s. They signed a 3-year pack for 1970, 71, and 72. And we were the first game of the season for those 3 years. And the reason they did that, they were coming off some horrible years, and they wanted to get off to a good start with a win, so they thought they could pick on us. They picked us in the wrong years. We had a guy by the name of Mike Ciani who ripped them apart my sophomore and junior year.
I remember that name.
And Lou and Doug, let me tell you a little story, just real quickly. They moved me from tight end to linebacker in the spring of my freshman year, and I got injured, so I didn't get to play linebacker except on the fourth team when we started regular practice.
Yeah.
They were going to redshirt me. And I said, okay, that's okay. I got to learn this position. The Friday before the Saturday game at Maryland, on a walkthrough, our senior outside linebacker tears his ACL. Just got it.
Oh, God.
And the backup to him was a guy that was I played against in high school and was the same year as me. Billy McManus, and he was a quarterback, but they converted him to linebacker freshman year. So he was going to start. I got a call after practice on Friday night, and I had play again because they were going to Maryland, and they said, you're dressing for the game, and we're taking you tonight. We're going down there tonight. We're taking you with us.
Oh, wow.
You can play 5 quarters and still get redshirted, so we're going to put you on all the special teams. I can't tell you how excited I was. In the second, I'm on the side, pretty good special teams, and all of a sudden, I hear the head coach yelling my name, and I think I'm in trouble. But here comes Billy McManus hobbling off the field. He had twisted his ankle. I couldn't even get into the huddle because they had already broken the offensive huddle, and the defensive end is telling me where to line up. And they, in the films, you ought to see me. I am so nervous. I got my arms going and my feet going. You know what they're going to do? They're going to run the first play at me. And they run a play at me. I was so pumped up. I jacked the tight end who tried to block me, knocked him down, and made a 3-yard loss on a tackle on the running back. And so we go to the next play. Now I'm really pumped up. Everybody's hitting me in the helmet. And I chased the guy going the other way. That was a mistake because if there was a reverse, I was supposed to be the border guy on the right side. This guy stopped, tried to reverse himself, but I got nobody blocking me. Another 3-yard loss. Then on third down, I got the first guy out of the backfield who's the fullback, and I see him setting up for a draw, and I blitzed through, not supposed to, but I blitzed through the guard center gap, and I hit him while he got the ball for a 4-yard loss. The next series, Billy goes back in, and he wrecks himself even worse. Now, we win that game. The next week, I got a start on national TV against Boston College.
Congratulations. That's excellent.
And the next couple of weeks, Billy and I switched off first quarter, second quarter. And in Navy, I got an interception that helped us win the game with 2 minutes to go. And from then on, I was the starter. So there are some crazy stories about people coming from nowhere. All those things had to happen. But those Maryland games were really tough games, and tough games for them to lose.
Wildcat record, any prediction?
We played Maryland this week. I've just got off a call with the offensive and defensive coordinators. And, you know, they can't hide it. This team's got a lot of seniority. They've got guys that are fast. This is where we really get hurt when we play Penn State and Pitt.
Yeah.
The speed. We can keep up from for a half. We can play hard with them against Penn State. They had 12 yards rushing and 12 attempts. But coming back in the second half, they picked us apart with the speed of button hooks and people just running away from our safeties and our corners. Yeah. But our guys will give it a good shot. And you hope that we just hang in there and don't get embarrassed. And then we'll be on with the rest of the schedule.
Excellent. A prediction for Villanova?
I would like to see us keep them within 2 touchdowns of us. If it's 28-14, I'd be happy with that. Get out to the players because they're looking to win it. Okay, you never can tell. We've got a quarterback that is going to be an NFL player, and if he has a great game, it could be the difference. We'll see.
Hey, Kev, before we go, any new memorabilia in your sports closet?
You know what's? I've gotten a couple of Coach Vermeil ding balls, along with one or two from Harold Carmichael. But mostly that stuff goes to my grandboys.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. We'll ask what that value is. We'll send you that and we get 10%. Okay. When they have to be sold for college. Hey, former Eagles linebacker and all-around good guy, Kevin Riley, as always, can't thank you enough for being on the Museum of Sports show.
Luke,
and
I'll tell you, Lou, great to see you. Keep doing it. Keep doing it as long as you can. And Doug, stay out of trouble. And if you get in trouble, give me a call, all right?
All righty.
The Museum of Sports keeps me off the streets.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too. When we come back, sports collectibles writer for Sports Illustrated and Sports Collectors Daily, Horacio Ruiz, when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a minute.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Christmas Eve, 1978, Atlanta Stadium. For the first time in 18 years, the Philadelphia Eagles are playing a meaningful game in December. They are in the playoffs against the Atlanta Falcons.
We're back on the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, brought to you every week by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our next guest there, you see him in the Zoom box, is new to the Museum of Sports Show. He's a New York City school teacher by day, but at night he moonlights as a sports collectible writer for Sports Collectors Daily and Sports Illustrated, among many other publications. And he's the author of The White Knight, The Calvin Patterson Story, and The Integration of Florida State Football. A big Museum of Sports Show welcome to Mr. Horacio Ruiz. Horacio, how are you?
Thank you so much, Doug and Luke, for having me. I'm doing great. Very honored to be here and to be able to talk some sports and sports collectibles.
So I've got to talk with you. Sports Collectors Daily, I get their little updates, and I thought, you know, that's kind of a cool publication, and it's something that wasn't around when I was a kid, you know, a million decades ago. You collected stuff pretty passively because it was fun and there was gum in it, like if it was cards. And but now collecting, as our partner, who's the king of sports collectibles, and our partner in the museum, they've got the world's largest, most valuable sports memorabilia collection. And they're our partner in the museum.
Wow.
You know, you've got all sorts of digital online resources now, Sports Collectors Daily being one of many things that people can kind of, you know, seek out to figure out how to collect. I mean, how you're young enough, I'm guessing, that you had a little bit of internet stuff. That how did you get interested in collectibles and memorabilia?
You know, I grew up just like everybody. Everybody has collecting cards when I was 6 or 7 years old. Would go to the my local card shop and buy some packs for a couple of dollars. And I had no idea what they were worth. I remember at the time the big card was Scott Erickson from the Minnesota Twins. And a guy, you guys remember that? That was the big chase. And a guy offered me $5 for the card and I turned him down because I thought, you know, if this guy's offering me $5 for this, it's going to be worth $100 in 10 years. Now I could probably get it for 10 cents. So
you know, back then, but you had that mindset of, you know, collectability, you know, buy and hold. Yeah, I mean, that's not something that was ever in my head. I mean, that's unique to probably your generation and succeeding ones.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You know, I did grow up around that time where the Ken Griffey Upper Deck card was coming out, and that card, you know, you were paying about $100 for those rookie cards. What happened, of course, and you probably know the story with this, is the junk wax area. I mean, that Griffey must have been printed hundreds, literally hundreds of thousands of times. And so the value of the cards just plummeted. You know, you thought you were sitting on a gold mine with the Ken Griffey, all these young kids and even adult collectors. And then they got fooled, you know, they got tricked. Upper Deck had been printing, you know, tons of them. And before you knew it, the values went down. But they have seen a resurgence because of what we call manufactured scarcity. And what that is basically you can grade your cards now, right, on a 1 to 10 scale. And so the manufactured scarcity is, well, you know, if you get a gem mint, a PSA 10, a perfect Griffey card, now you're talking. Now you have something of value.
Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to just any regular Griffey card.
Horacio, you do this every day. This is part of your profession. Are you amazed at the prices that some of these things are bringing? The Babe Ruth jersey recently, the Mickey Mantle cards, oddball things like Pokemon and others, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Did you ever envision this?
I got back into the space, I would say, maybe about 10 years ago. So before it really took off, but it was seeing a slight resurgence. I'm not surprised you mentioned that Babe Ruth sale, because that's like a American history right there. And I could see something like that going for millions of dollars. I think it sold for like 23 million dollars, that jersey. I mean, you can't get that stuff anywhere. But I am amazed still at some of the values of certain cards, where I get the scarcity. I get that they're rare, but the price has got ahead of themselves. And so we've seen them retract. I always thought that the actual collectibles, not the cards, were always much more scarce than the cards, and they should be worth more. And we're beginning to see that. It doesn't surprise me, because that jersey should be in Cooperstown, and it should be in Cooperstown for 100 years.
Yeah.
but now somebody has it in their private collection, and that's okay. But that's how much that jersey is actually worth, you know.
Lou, what was the jersey that our partners in the museum, the DePaccia family, sold summer of 2019? And that was a Babe Ruth jersey.
That was the highest sold piece of memorabilia at that time.
5 million, I think.
5.6 million.
And that was big, you know, 5-6 years ago now.
Right.
Or 5 years ago now. Yeah, the one that just, I mean, it's just, and everybody was sort of aghast at that. And I know we had to keep it quiet at the time. That,
yeah.
You know, it was our partner. And then obviously when Nick Jr. came on, you know, everybody was sort of agog at that. And, you know, flash forward 5 years, and that's kind of like, you know, just petty cash.
That's true.
And is it what happens in a time frame like that, Horatio? Is it what you've mentioned, that people now have just, they're looking at physical possessions? Cards are kind of like assembly line type things, but physical possessions are almost always one of a kind, game worn, you know, dirt, blood dried on it, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. You know, as during COVID, the card market skyrocketed in an unhealthy manner, I'll say, to where people were getting themselves, they were looking at these things like investments, like stocks, and they're not stocks. You know, the 99.9% of these cards are not stocks. And so when the values got out of hand, people looked toward the memorabilia side, you know, and they noticed, I think this stuff is underpriced relative to the cards. And so then you saw the resurgence the skyrocketed values in the memorabilia, in the physical stuff, right? So that's what happened. And it took off. So memorabilia took off after cards, but it also took off. And then the second thing is the prevalence of photo matching. So now it's way more prevalent now. Now you can actually place that jersey, those cleats, those shoes, in that moment, you know, where the player was wearing them, you know, if it was during a championship game or whatever,
yep,
that really, you know, elevates your collectible as well.
It's just the advent of AI, and it literally is, it's almost like facial recognition for collectibles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's cool because you can actually place it now, and you can see the player wearing it, which gives it that extra provenance that we call the provenance. Where did it come from? That's so important as well. It starts with the player, but then also part of it is who's owned it.
What do you have in your personal collection that you're most proud of?
I told Doug this. We've been communicating. I don't have anything big or anything.
we'll do a little show and tell there, Horatio. What do you got there?
So you know, something that's been getting better is ticket stubs. So I got I'm a New Yorker here, so I've got a ticket stub from the 1986 World Series, Game 6.
Oh, very nice.
The Mookie Wilson. And I recently got it signed by Ray Knight at Fanatics Fest.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so, what I'm going to do is when we get over to our King of Sports Collectibles, I'm going to have him do a couple of quick spot appraisals on some of your stuff. And Kevin Riley, who we had on, the former Eagles linebacker, had a couple of Dick Vermeil Hall of Fame balls. So we always kind of scare the crap out of people and give them values. But see, that's something, and ticket stubs, because things are so digital now, and it's sometimes for playoff games, World Series, Super Bowls, they'll issue a collector version, but everything else is just a scan of the phone.
That's gone. All that stuff is gone.
It's all gone. And the other cool thing is this was at the game, you know?
Yeah.
So somebody was at the game celebrating that. Maybe they left early. I don't know, but you know, it was at the game, and it's there. So I got Ray Knight to sign it. My plan is to now get Mookie Wilson to sign it over here on this side, and it'll complete that little set.
Yeah, let us know when you get that one, and then we'll see if that bumps it up. What else you got?
I don't know. So then I'm gonna go one more Mets thing. I got this World Series ball signed by 28 members of the 1986 World Series team. So listen, I'm a Mets fan. I'm a long-suffering Mets fan. I'm kind of stuck in the
town. Oh, sorry to hear.
Sorry to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you guys have won a couple titles recently. So the Phillies. So, you know, I got the big ones. The only autograph that I'm missing here is Gary Carter, unfortunately. But it had, you know, it's got Keith Hernandez, Ray Knight, Mookie Wilson, Howard Johnson, my favorites, a bunch of guys, Davey Johnson, Daryl Strawberry, Dwight Gooden. So I couldn't pass up on this ball.
Since
this is a Philadelphia show, I had to show out some Philadelphia stuff. This is actually one I'm really proud of. So I mentioned this. So this is can you see the name there?
We're going to report you right now.
Rich Allen, huh?
Yeah, Rich Allen. This is the base that came from the game that they retired, where they retired his number and they inducted him into the Hall of Fame. Does the game used first base used innings 1 through 3?
Oh my God.
And it's crazy because, and in that game, there was nobody there. There was nobody in attendance because it was during, you know, they had lockdowns. So that's where the game was played. Now, the way I got this was this game was in 2020, September 2020, I believe it says here. Yeah, September 3rd, 2020. And I went to a Mets gear in the summer of the next year with some friends, Mets versus Phillies. And I saw this in the Philly shop. And I was like, I got to get this.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's still what's up the top four there? It's still got some. Whatever you do, don't clean it.
Yeah,
that's real dirt.
This thing's got marks all over it. I got to get some fantastic. Don't do that.
Can we ask you what you paid for that to the Phillies?
So here's the deal. I mean, it was a steal. It was. And I'll tell you why. It was $250.
Oh man,
that seems really low.
Yeah. So I went to, I'm from Miami. I visit my parents. So a lot, you know, once a year, maybe more, but I go to Miami, I go to the Marlins games and, you know, they're just selling regular bases, nothing special, game used bases for $400 a pop there now.
Wow.
No commemorative, no nothing. So yeah, I said for $250, me being a collector, my wife wasn't too happy when I came home with it from Philadelphia. she's like, you're not even a Phillies fan. I was like, yeah, but this is cool.
Well, and, he gets into the Hall of Fame. I think it's going to be worth a hell of a lot more.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Let's switch gears for a second. Phillies have 4 games coming up against the New York Mets. You may have heard about it. The Mets are coming on. The Phillies are kind of winning, losing, winning, losing.
Yeah.
They're pretty much playing 500 ball since the All-Star game. The Mets are just the opposite. They were ready to sell back in July. Now they're looking to get, they're in second place.
Incredible.
So this is going to be a tough series. And we got one of your ex-players pitching tonight.
Yeah.
Tejon Walker, ERA, you know, higher than my temperature. So I'm a little nervous.
Well, we're very aware of it. The Mets are fighting for their lives. You know, they have that wild card spot. They're 2 games ahead of the Braves. The Braves, you know, have been beset by a bunch of injuries. So that's kind of maybe part of the reason, but regardless, I'm glad that the Mets are there. The Phillies took 2 of 3 from the Mets not too long ago. So the Phillies are tough. The Phillies are a world championship caliber team. It'll be interesting to see if the Mets can, you know, if the Mets can split this series, I think they're in good shape moving forward. You know, the Braves are kind of slumping a bit.
Right.
I would love to see the Mets win the series 3-1, obviously. But I'd take a 2-2 split in this series. Yeah.
Well, we don't want to see the Mets in the playoffs, and we may have to face them.
How much can happen then?
Hey, Horacio, how often are you doing sort of like real-time, real-time collecting? So if you've got a series like this tonight, would you try to find something that was game worn tonight that might be, you know, kind of cheap that you think could net you something on spec? Are you trying to look for more of a sure thing that's still within your affordability range?
Yeah, for me, that's more of it. Like if I happen to be somewhere, I'll take a look and see if there's something that's worth it. You know, I always have this, you know, cost benefit analysis in my mind. Like, you know, what could I do with this $200? You know, because am I throwing away $200 or am I going to put it to good use? And not to say that I should think about my collectibles that way, but you have to have a line, right? You have to have a line, especially when you don't have, you know, all the disposable income in the world. So I stuff that I can get some value. If I can share one more thing, for example, like I found this on Dan Marino, right?
That's nice.
Someone was selling bucks and I said, okay, yeah, you know that. I'm from Miami. Dan Marino was a big icon of mine. So for $50, that's a good, to me, that's a good price.
Absolutely.
So,
hey, yeah. Horacio, we got to go to break. Can you hang with us very quickly through the break and we'll have you maybe bring the base and the Dan Marino football. We'll get a quick spot appraisal from our King of Sports Collectibles. Can you hang with us through the break?
Sure, absolutely.
Excellent. Hey, that's Collectibles writer with Sports Collectors Daily and Sports Illustrated. Horacio Ruiz is going to stick with us so we can hopefully shock the crap out of him with a great spot appraisal.
Make him rich.
here on the Museum of Sports Show. When we continue on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, back in 2 and 2.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Stand by, Dan.
More collectible.
We're back here on the Museum of Sports Show on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment, and they have a hell of a logo. Yeah, hold the logo up there, Nick. Good Lord. Up next, he is one of the kings of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, well in excess of $50 million, and our proud partner in the Museum of Sports Complex, or Museum of Sports to be built at the South Philly Sports Complex. Say hi to Nick Depatche Jr., everybody. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Hey, doing great. Good to see you. You recovered from the big fundraiser last week?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we had a good time, didn't we, Lou?
Absolutely.
And we'll talk about that in just a second. Horacio Ruiz, a contributing writer for Sports Illustrated and Sports Collectors Daily, is hanging with us through the break here. We had him do a little show and tell, Nick, and we, as you know, we like to knock people off their chairs with a spot appraisal. Horacio. Horacio, you've got a couple of things there. The first one I think that's kind of cool is the base. Give Nick a quick description. And Nick, what do you think something like this is worth?
Nick, this is actually a Philly. I'm a New York guy, but I picked at a New York Mets Phillies game about 3 years ago, actually. And it's a game used first base from the day that they retired Dick Allen's number and they inducted him into their Wall of Fame, Hall of Fame. So, you know, it's got his information, Phillies 15, Allen 15. It's got the date and everything. So it's just it's a game used.
And it's got, turn it up. It's got spike marks on it, which we told him not to clean off.
Yeah.
What just off the top of your head, Nick, what would something like that go for?
It would be dollars. It's not signed by Dick Allen. He wasn't alive, unfortunately, at the time. If it was signed, it would be even more.
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. So you got a little appreciation over what you bought it for, Horatio. So that's good. That's good. And time is on
time,
your side.
Yeah. And if he makes the Hall of Fame, which many people think he should, then it definitely goes up in value.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. All right. The other one was the, now Horatio's from Miami, right? He's got a little something he picked up here, your Marino ball.
This is just a recent ball I picked up from a well-known autograph collector, Les Wolf, and he was selling a Marino ball, signed ball. I picked it up for it's a regular autograph. Just showed Doug kind of what recently is. Bought it for $50. That's all.
Yeah, you could get probably $200 for it, $150 or $200, but it's definitely worth the $50 you paid for it.
But during the break, I mentioned that Tom Brady probably messed with that ball, so it's worth even more, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, look at the pressure. The pressure is all screwed up.
Yeah. So you see, even everything adds up. If you could get deals like that, it adds up.
Absolutely. And these
how about
are
the Ray Knight stub?
Yeah.
And the Ray Knight. This is a Game 6, 1986 World Series, signed by Ray Knight, and I want to get it signed by Mookie as well, Mookie Wilson. But I got to get it signed by Ray, so. I picked this up at the Atlantic City National a few years back, and I wasn't into collecting stubs, but when I saw it, I held it. I was like, whoa, you know? So
yeah. And Nick, if you could get Mookie to sign it, I mean, I could see it going for 500. I could see that being worth 500.
That's awesome. Listen, these things are staying. This is staying with me until who knows.
Yeah, and I think a New York Mets fan might pay a little more for that.
Yeah, and definitely get Mookie. I mean, Ray Knight was the MVP of that World Series, so that's a great signature. But yeah, get Mookie to sign it because it's Game Six.
Yeah, yeah. Mookie hit the ball. Ray Knight's the one who scored the winning run.
If you really wanted to increase its value, you'd get Bill Buckner to sign it too.
Oh my God.
Oh, Lou, it's funny, but I'm not kidding. If he got Bill Buckner to sign it, I mean, then it would definitely go way up.
Wow.
Oh, wow. All right, Horatio, you heard it here. We get 10%. All right.
Buckner embraces it. He doesn't embrace it, but he knows that that's part of.
You got to dance with the one that brung you, basically.
Exactly. Right. So if you had brought it to a show and Bill Buckner happens to be on an autograph show, I don't think it would be out of the question that he would sign it.
You know, that'd be. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think Buckner passed away a couple of years ago. I don't know.
I think you might be. You are right.
Correct.
So actually, Horatio, if you get him to sign it,
that's
millions.
He did pass away.
And get Babe
did,
Ruth too. Yeah,
he did pass away. You're right.
Yeah.
Buckner. Yeah. I mean,
a mere detail.
Yeah. Hey, contributing writer to Sports Collectors Daily. You can find him at sportscollectorsdaily.com. Is that the website, Horatio?
Sportscollectorsdaily.com. Right. It was founded by Rich Miller. Real appreciative of Rich. He's a big voice in the journalism and sports collectibles, and so I thank him a lot for having me on the site and for allowing me to write. So yeah,
excellent. And keep us posted. That's as awesome. You get more stuff and you got something coming up we should be talking about, let us know. Come back anytime.
Yeah, thanks, Horatio.
Horatio Ruiz, thanks so much, man.
Thank you very much, guys.
No Bill Buckners. Hey, Nick, you and Lou were at the big fundraiser last week for the DePace Museum down at kind of the sneak preview museum in Sewell. Sold out event. Pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of fun with Rob Thompson, Charlie Manuel. The big the Philly Fanatic was there.
Right.
And I don't know, Lou, did he give you a kiss? He gave a lot of women kisses.
He stuck his tongue out at me.
No.
I guess that's a kiss.
Stop.
No. He has a thing,
Yeah, I know he does. That whole costume is you get enveloped in it and it's asphyxiation. Yeah.
But it was a great time. We had a question and answer session and poignant questions, some not so poignant questions.
Yeah, you had Rob Thompson, you had Charlie Manuel, hitting coach too, right?
Mike Colitri, the bench coach.
Yeah,
bench
what coach. A great guy he is. Really friendly.
Paisan.
Guy.
He's a paisan. So we had a great time. Anthony Gargano and Bob Pantano, two radio personalities that are well known in the area. They were the MCs of the night.
An auction that went very well.
Yes, there were some nice pieces that were auctioned off. Nice original pieces of artwork from famous Japanese artist. His name is O-H.
Oh?
Yes, I can't remember. His first name starts with an S, but it's...
I thought it was O.
O is his last name, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. So.
That went really well. And I got a chance to ask, I mentioned earlier in the show, I asked Rob what he thinks of the terrible home plate umpiring this year. And he turned it around on me and he said, it's that little white box. I got to get rid of that because it's making everybody look bad. He said, the umpires are doing a good job. They're doing the best they can, but I have never seen anything like it in all my days of watching baseball. Nick, these umpires are just awful behind the plate and arrogant.
He just wants to get on the good side of the umpires in case they were.
Well, that's probably true. Yeah.
In case he gets one of those at his prediction, not only would they make it to the World Series, he said very uncharacteristically, as you mentioned, Lou, they're going to win.
Yep, he said we're going to win it.
He did. He said, we're going to win the whole damn thing is what he said.
Yes, he did say that. Now, listen, let me ask you this. Were you at that wonderful Eagles game the other night? Did you freeze up? He froze up. Talking about the Eagles, he froze.
I was the people in the room with me now who were there with me. One of which is the doctor, my dad, and the others are friend Paul. They're busy doing something else. But
examining people's hearts. Big deal. But it was a great event. It was just, the event was wonderful. They raised a lot of good money for the museum, which is our sneak preview museum over in New Jersey. When we get finally into Philadelphia with the big museum, a lot of the collection is going to be there. And we can't wait. And this was a wonderful building block.
Absolutely.
And what your dad's doing is just amazing.
And you can find out more about it by going to depachemuseum.org. You can schedule a private tour. You can see everything, and you're going to see a fraction of what they've got. That's all the time we've got for this week, guys. We want to thank our guests, former Eagles linebacker Kevin Riley, Sports Collectors Daily writer Horacio Ruiz, and, of course, our king of sports collectibles, Mr. Nick DePaccia Jr. And don't forget to buy Lou's recent book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Get your custom autographed copy by going to themuseumofsports.org, and Lou will pin a personal greeting in crayon. A portion of the proceeds goes to the Museum of Sports to be built in the new South Philly Sports Complex. Museum of Sports show brought to you by the DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld and Nick DePaccia Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Lewis.
These are the good old days.
They are indeed.